I'm Faith Middleton. It's great to have you joining the party on the Food Schmooze here on WNPR in Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and New York, including the East End of Long Island. My food buddies are here. Chris Prosperi of Metro Beast Restaurant in Simsbury, Connecticut, at his new location, which is the Pinchot House, right? Lori Mack, producer, senior producer Lori Mack, and producer Jonathan McNichol. Hey, everybody.
Hey, Faith.
You can tell your friends, no matter where they live, they can listen to the Food Schmooze from anywhere in the world, as many people do, at WNPR.org. I want to start us off by saying I just bought off the shelf in the supermarket a packaged Indian chickpea dish in a pouch. Do not do that.
Oh, I was getting all excited.
I was like, wow, you found
something
good. I was
getting so excited.
No.
Oh, she made a new discovery.
A little bait and switch.
No, we need that kind of advice too, what yes. not to buy.
Chris, you are the new editor of our Storage Wars department. You've got a great tip from Cook's Illustrated.
This is great, and I could have used this the other day. And this is actually a great tip if you are like me and you have trouble organizing your pantry. And this is about the cans that you put in your pantry because they never really fit in there perfectly,
right.
And they take up more room than they need
to. And fall, yeah.
And they fall. So this is from a reader.
When the top shelf's gone, you can't see what's down the bottom.
That's right.
This is from a reader, Riley Neal from San Antonio, Texas. And what he did is he took a magazine rack. You know, like you would stick magazines upright in?
You need one about 5 inches wide.
You need one about 5 inches wide, yeah. So it's the length of the can. And then on their side, you can put the cans in and stack them right up in this magazine rack and pull them out as you use them, and the next one falls down and ready to use.
That's ingenious.
That's pretty good.
I need one that fits the big industrial cans, though, that we use, like for ketchup and
for your
tomatoes.
Restaurant.
And, yeah.
Yeah. You're never going to find a magazine rack.
They don't
like
make
that.
Magazine racks that
way.
They would have
so.
To be 10. Inches.
I don't know what to suggest
phone
for
book.
You.
Phone book rack.
Phone book
Ooh.
Rack.
So,
AT&T.
But I love this. And it's a great way to organize the pantry. And yeah. If you go to IKEA, for instance, you can get these
sure.
magazine racks.
And they even look cool at IKEA.
Bargain rates, but they're all over the place. All right. So I'm thinking we eat outside on a warm, sunny day as much as possible right now, especially by the water, don't you
no
think?
Definitely. Question. Where do you go?
Hopkins in it's actually New Preston.
Lake Warmoth.
Yeah, all right. And it is just above the lake, so it's not on the water, but the views of the lake.
It's up on a rise.
Yeah, it's up on a rise, and the vineyard, Hopkins Vineyard, is behind it, and you can eat on this stone patio.
It's like being on the Rhine.
Oh my gosh.
In Germany.
And at sunset, it is the most amazing view.
Lenny and Joe's.
They sure. opened over at Long Wharf
right.
in New Haven.
Oh, I
and
didn't
that's
know
a,
that.
On,
really?
On Long Island Sound, so that's
wow.
a good view.
That's where Rusty Scupper was. That
yeah.
place,
right, that's right.
Ooh, that was a,
and
yeah.
We've talked about Captain Scott's, which
London.
Is right on a dock, right, Jonathan, yeah. in New London. And if you're lucky enough to live near Sag Harbor on the east end of Long Island, you can eat and drink well outside at Dockside Bar and Grill. This is where Elizabeth Barnes and Stacey Sheehan preside. And you, what's fun is that you can eat inside or outside on the patio. And if you eat outside, you're looking just across the street. All these boats
Isn't that
on
awesome?
The harbor.
Beautiful.
And as the sun is setting, it's beautiful. Boats and ships, I should
I
say, because it's Sag Harbor. And you can enjoy, I'm looking at the menu, swordfish with a green peppercorn sauce, a whole sea bass with a ginger soy reduction. They're barbecued baby back ribs, to name just a few choices. And they're online at docksidesagharbor.com.
Food tastes better when you're sitting in a
it
setting like that.
Does.
I don't know why, but it does.
Sometimes you don't even care.
Yeah.
You know,
it's like it could be a mediocre
so
meal and you're
great.
Just like, this is just so awesome.
I just
here.
Thought about this. In Stony Creek, Connecticut, the market, the pizza market
okay.
is right outside.
That's right.
On
and
the
you
water.
Sit out there
so
sometimes?
You can sit out. Oh, yeah, yeah, sure.
So get it in
breakfast,
while it's
lunch,
still,
and dinner.
Get it in while it's still here, the weather, right?
We have vintage recipes from our returning guest, Amy Traverso of Yankee Magazine. She's been on before to talk about these vintage recipes. It's now been made into a hardback cookbook, and we're going to try meatloaf that is so moist because it's baked in a brown paper bag. This is a dish that goes way back, and I want to tell you something. This is delicious. And if you don't want to do brown paper bag, you can do parchment paper and wrap it in parchment because it's the same technique. Also, we're going to talk about my best late night snack. that is heart healthy, but you're just going to want to eat so much of this. And we have a great wine value and a beer cocktail, thanks to our friends at Connecticut's City Steam Brewery. You can get all of our food and wine drink recipes now online at WNPR.org. Just search The Faith Middleton Show. Alex Provins is going to be with us to talk about that special wine. And by the way, this wine that we're going to be talking about, I just love. It got a Best Buy from Wine Spectator, and Alex uses this as his house wine, and I'm about to do the same. So you're going to want to know about this. And it's, you know, runs around $13 a bottle. You know, if you buy by the case, mm-hmm. it's going to be a little bit less. You can think of it as your weekend wine, your house wine, whatever way you want to think about it. It's a great wine to be proud of if you bring it to somebody's house.
Right.
You know, as the wine walking in the door, this is a porch wine, and it goes with so many foods. So that's coming up on the show. We want to talk for a minute about getting in the car and taking off and visiting some of our apple orchards. We've been talking with you about apples on a previous show. We want to talk about heading to the apple orchard, and you want to bring a little picnic kit with you, because I have friends who have a tradition every year. As soon as the orchards are going, and they're going, they bring a little bag, a picnic kit, a knife, a couple of napkins. For these folks, they drink wine, so they bring wine and a couple of plastic glasses. And what they do at the orchards is they stop at ones that sell cheese and bread. They get the apples, and they make a picnic in the car or sitting outside. Sometimes these nice. Orchards have picnic tables. So we encourage you to do this.
That sounds really good. And I would be the one going, oh, did you wash that?
Lori would bring her wipes.
Yes, I would.
But well, I tell you, it's one of my favorite childhood memories.
Sitting outside?
No, going to apple picking.
Apple.
I mean, I have two brothers, so the three boys, my mom and dad, would load us in the car.
Terrible.
No, it wasn't. They'd load us in the station wagon.
It's like
and
a nightmare.
Three boys
in an apple orchard.
Stop it. We summered in Goshen, right, Connecticut, and there was an apple orchard in Cornwall, and I remember it like it was yesterday. And my mom would give us each a little basket, and we would go off and pick our own apples.
And throw the apples at each other.
Yeah, right.
No,
Did you eat them? And, you know, sitting around having a picnic?
Oh, no, we would just eat. We never did the picnic thing, but we always ate apples. I mean, we just loved it because we could climb trees mm-hmm. and get, like, mm-hmm. a competition on who could climb the highest, and which you probably can't do anymore now. But boy, did we have fun.
And Mrs. Prosperi, they were calling her up saying, get your son out of here.
The trees.
there's something about the pairing of cheese and apples.
Yes, there is.
I don't know what
and
it
pears,
is.
Definitely.
And definitely pears.
Are there pear orchards, too? I haven't been to one around here.
Yeah. Bishop's has them. Lyman Orchards has them.
I just read an article. Who knows whether these studies, you never know which studies are worth anything, but I was just reading in the New York Times science section a column on trying to figure out, a university tried to figure out which fruits were delivering the most health benefits of all the fruits. And they said the top two were apples and blueberries.
And to do anything you can to
make sure as a basic that those are in your diet.
Well, how long have we been saying an apple a day?
So and that accounts for frozen blueberries, but now we're just awash in apples so that you can do, you know, you can certainly get plenty of apples. Some of the orchards have an organic technique and some don't. So we leave it to you to decide what's important to you. Now, if you don't drink alcohol and you're not bringing a bottle of wine to have at your picnic, when you stop and get the apples and the cheese and the baguette at these places, you can pick up apple cider.
Right.
Which is so delicious.
Oh,
that's
I love
apple cider.
Oh, and do you take it home and mull it?
I love hot mulled
apple cider.
I do.
Oh, my gosh. We take a little piece of orange. You know, it's like a half an orange and then a little bit of clove, a little bit of bay leaf, and we just put it in a pot.
Cinnamon.
And just, oh, yeah, and a stick of cinnamon and just bring it up to a simmer. And then if you want to make it an adult kind of thing, you just put in a little splash of brandy after you heat it up.
Oh, is that what you put in?
Yeah, you can.
If you want to sell your house.
Yeah, oh, that smell, huh? Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
And sitting outside when it gets a little, you know, when that chill starts coming in and you have one of these hot apple toddy kind of, oh, that's
fall.
It is.
It is really good.
That's coming.
Yeah. What is an apple toddy? But what's the toddy part? I mean, is
the
there
brandy?
It's brandy. Yes, it
can be cognac if you're going high end, but it's usually a brandy, or you could even do.
I'm going to create a cocktail.
You could even do
for a future show with bourbon and apple cider.
See, I've never
for Thanksgiving that. To get ready for Thanksgiving. I'm going to work on this, and on the next show we'll do that.
That's a good one.
Okay. I use cider for drinks all fall.
Do you?
Vodka. Yeah.
Union League used to have an amazing fall drink
with apple cider.
It was in a martini glass.
Yes,
wasn't
it was. Yeah. And on the rim there was sugar and cinnamon. It was just worth going for that.
Okay, we're gonna.
Yeah, we should fall drinks. I never even thought of that.
Well, you know what? Everybody likes to try something different when folks walk in the door at Thanksgiving. And so, for those who like to try a cocktail, we're going to have one ready for you.
That's a great idea. Apple cider cocktail. Mm.
Got to be careful, though. Don't want to burn the turkey.
Yeah,
don't want to forget about that.
All right, so start drinking after the turkey's out of the oven.
You're in the disaster zone today.
What went wrong last weekend? Come on.
Yeah, what didn't?
This is a mom who's still dealing with the start of school.
Eat your cereal.
Right.
So what do we have ahead for you? We have a Best Buy wine that I tried and loved. We'll tell you about that. It is a red. It is perfect for the rest of the year, in fact. And it's in the $12.99 category. So it's a great price point. And it's French. It will be readily available in our listening region. We have my favorite late night snack. It is so easy to make. It's heart healthy and delicious. It's crispy kale chips with toasted lemon zest. Trust me, as good as potato chips. We have lost and vintage recipes, how to make meatloaf in a brown paper bag that is so moist, so delicious, and great for sandwiches the next day. I'm Faith Middleton. I hope you'll make a charitable contribution to Feed the Hungry. More mouthwatering conversation and fun here on the Food Schmooze. We'll be right back.
Cornbread out of sight. Beans. Cornbread said, now that's all right. Beans. Meet me on the corner tomorrow night.
I'm Faith Middleton. The Food Schmooze Party here on WNPR is heard Wednesdays at 3 and 9 p.m., Saturdays at noon, and you can discover our great guest and topic lineup. Join the conversation with us on Facebook. Simply search The Faith Middleton Show. Thanks to our talented crew, Jean Amatruda, Chris Prosperi of Metro Beast Restaurant in Simsbury, Connecticut, at its new location, Marion Roy, producer Jonathan McNichol, and senior producer Lori Mack. Alex Province is here from Eder and Goodman Distributors. I love this red from France. It's a Cote de Rhone, and it's about $12.99 at your wine store. We're going to pour and taste. Alex, I know you order this by the case to drink at home, right?
It's a Bennett Province house wine, for sure.
I'll be over tomorrow.
Yeah, I'd have to work. Really. This is a delicious wine, I have to say. So this is called, and we'll give you a chance. You can find this at our site, WNPR.org, search The Faith Middleton Show. This is a wine by this name, Pierre Amadou, and it's a Cote de Rhone. The year is 2010. You can write these things down or just go to the website and find it. It's going to be about $12.99 in the store. And what is so interesting, Wine Spectator gave this a Best Buy. This is the kind of wine that does two things. I call it a walking around wine or a sitting on the porch wine. So that you put a little chill on this and you just sit back in a comfortable chair and have it by the glass. And yet it has a little bit of structure in it so that it goes well with a lot of kinds of foods. But it has a little touch of elegance, a little richness, but a real warmth and friendliness to it.
And a little spiciness to it as well. So the wines of the Rhone have some of the underbrush smell. So when you smell it, you get some of what they call garrigue. So it's a chaparral or the shrub or the Mediterranean. If you smell, you get like a spiciness and some fruit. But I drink it by the bottle, not by the glass.
I like it for this time of year, too. It's that perfect wine to get you from summer into fall. So if it's a hot day, you can have it a little with a little chill on it. But if it's getting a little chilly at night, you can have it at room temperature. So it's one of those really good crossover summer to fall wines.
And here's the thing. I love this wine. I see why Wine Spectator gave it a Best Buy at this price, because it goes with so many things. Let's talk for a second, Alex, about what it goes with. And then we'll tell people again the name of the wine and the price and everything.
So the easiest thing probably is a roast chicken. So delicious butter-infused roasted chicken.
On the grill or in the oven?
On the grill. You could use a brick or whatever. You know. Yeah.
Beer can. That's my favorite one.
Good with lamb, I think.
Lamb would be great. I mean, that would be classic Southern French, would be lamb and a Cote de Rhone. You could also do a cassoulet if you were feeling ambitious.
Or freezing out.
Freezing out.
Yeah. Tomatoes?
Naturally goes well with tomatoes. So
you could grill some, make a tart.
You could make a stew out of tomatoes. Anything that has acidity, this wine has natural acidity. So tomatoes have acidity, so they go really well together.
Well, Alex, we just this minute... Chris, Lori, Jonathan, we'd had this with meatloaf.
It was awesome.
And we're going to get to that recipe later on.
I was like, this is meatloaf
so
wine.
Good. It was really good. Meatloaf with a lot of ketchup in it.
Yeah,
it was
that
so delicious,
thing.
Wasn't it?
I think that's what the French had in mind when they made it, right?
It's like, we're sending this meatloaf to America, and they're going to have it with meatloaf.
Did the French have meatloaf?
Pâté, of course. That's where it came from.
No, that's
yes,
not meatloaf.
Totally meatloaf, but in a different form. But yes, totally.
But do they have our meatloaf?
They don't have our meatloaf, but I'm still going to put it out there. Pâté, meatloaf, same thing.
I think they would like
our meatloaf.
Same
preparation, same cooking method.
I'd like to see our meatloaf in the hands. I love meatloaf, especially as a sandwich the next day. What about, Alex, I know we share this idea that fish goes as well with many red wines as with white wines. So I think a grilled swordfish could work with this wine because there's a velvety softness in this at this price, which is amazing. What do you think?
So I couldn't agree more. I think people are always leaning towards whites with fish, but a nice, delicate, easy drinking red with a slight chill on it pairs beautifully with fish. So, and swordfish is pretty robust and big, so it'd be a perfect match.
And if you stewed tomatoes and then put it on top of the swordfish, right? That's heaven.
That's a great idea with some olives.
Oh, my
gosh,
yes.
Chop up some Kalamata olives
in
there.
And then that wine is, right?
Yeah. Sort of
and now, we're in Provence again. Alex, what are the grapes in this for people who care?
Okay, so primarily Grenache. That's the backbone, which incidentally is a Spanish grape, I always like to say. And then Syrah, which is clearly a French grape indigenous to the Rhone. So the backbone of all these Cote de Rhones primarily is Grenache.
Okay.
And do you see a percentage difference in the different makers?
So each year they fluctuate. This year it was 75% Grenache, 25% Syrah.
Yeah.
And then some years it's more 80 Grenache, 20 Syrah.
Why did they do that? Are they trying to appeal to certain American reviewers?
You know, I think it's more each vintage is different. The grapes are riper, less ripe, and they're trying to produce the best wine that they can. And so I think depending upon year, sort of the blend reflects the vintage.
Let me say, this is a great house wine. We could call it a weekend wine. It goes with so many things.
Can we call it a boat wine?
We could definitely call it a boat wine. This is my boatman here. So, Alex Provence, thank you so much. We're going to tell you what to say at your wine store. If it is not in stock, say the distributor is Eder Goodman, E-D-E-R, G-O-O-D-M-A-N, Eder Goodman. That's all you have to say, Eder Goodman. You know the price point is around $12.99. It has a screw cap top, which I love for a
house
wine.
That's why it's a boat wine.
Yeah, that's why it's a boat wine. You just say at the wine store, they said to look it up in the Rhone section, R-H-O-N-E. So that's the region of France that this is from. So it's so easy. Eder and Goodman, Rhone section in the book. And if you have forgotten this, you're in the car, you can't write this down, all you have to do is go to our website, WNPR.org and go straight to the Faith Middleton Show. You'll see it all there. This is Wine Spectator, again, gave this 88 points and a best value, a best buy. And I agree with them. I think this is terrific. That's why we chose it.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you, Alex. By the way, on the label, the wine is called Pierre Amadou. You know how to spell Pierre. Amadou is A-M-A-D-I-E-U. We say Amadou just to be simple. And it's a 2010. It doesn't matter if the year is different. But it should be around $12.99 in your store or better. There's also a word on the label, and the winemaker says it's a reference to the favorite band, the Rolling Stones. I think that's pretty cool.
So my French is terrible, but I call it Roule Pierre. So it's R-O-U-L-E Pierre. So Roule Pierre. So the stones in the Rhone are these round pebbles. They keep the vine warm at night when it's cold out.
Because they absorb the heat.
Yep. So it's Roule Pierre in reference to these Rolling Stones. But apparently, Pierre Amadou, the winemaker, loves the band, the Rolling Stones.
Okay, I like that a lot.
That's great.
I love this guy. And it's very, very good wine. Food schmooze, thumbs up. Thank you, Alex.
Hey, thank you.
Alex, I know you have to run, but if everybody else is going to stick around, I'm going to talk about one of my favorite cocktails. This is beer in a martini glass, believe it or not. At our last martini competition, the folks at Connecticut City Steam Brewery created something special for the night. Did you get to taste this?
I don't think so, because I am totally intrigued by beer in a martini glass.
Me
what
too.
What a treat this is. This is the easy recipe for this is online at WNPR.org. Just search the Faith Middleton Show. And this is so easy. Here is what you do. We tell you how to do it on the website. You take a glass and you fill it up, a glass big enough to fill up with some Blonde on Blonde Pale Air from City Steam, a little bit of Saint-Germain Elderflower Liqueur, and a few ounces of fresh lemonade, and then you stir it with a spoon a few times. You do not shake this one because you've got that fizz in the beer.
Sounds good.
Then you just... Does that sound good?
Where was I?
It was really good.
I totally missed
that one.
I did, and my girlfriend Katie really liked it a lot. We took this recipe home.
So did I, yeah. Jonathan. Yeah. Okay, then you strain it into a martini glass, and it makes a couple of martinis.
It's a beer cocktail.
It's a beer cocktail.
I love that idea, and it's low alcohol, right? That's totally what I want.
It's you know, they make good beer at City Steam. And so I love this recipe. Now, when they were passing out the recipe at our martini competition, they said, repeat for naughtiness, but don't be too naughty. And so I appreciate that.
Is that why you grabbed it?
We believe
that's
that.
That's why you grabbed
it. No, I agree with them. So, hey, I'll put non-alcoholic drinks in a martini glass. I just love how they look.
You could make that with non-alcoholic beer. And then you would just have a little bit of alcohol from the Saint-Germain.
Right.
Just ahead, we have Amy Traverso, who's going to tell us how to do brown paper bag meatloaf. Mm. And we just had it. We just ate this. It is delicious. And she's going to share information about a lot of other vintage recipes, the things our parents and grandparents made that a lot of us would like to bring back because they're so good. And this was one of them. So we're going to talk about that. I'm going to tell you how to make my new favorite late night snack. I'm telling you, if you like potato chips, this is the healthy version, and they are so good. And
crunchy,
so we're going to get to that. I have a restaurant discovery for all of you, and what a time I had. I was in Greenwich, Connecticut, getting my hair cut because my Eli Hamu, my hair cutter guy, is there, and so I just go where he goes. He's there. So I said, I've got to be quick, and but I'm starving. You know, where can you send me for a quick bite to eat for lunch? And he said, oh, do I have a thing for you. He said, walk down. This is the main street in Greenwich. It's called Greenwich Avenue. Yeah. He said, just walk down the street, and as you get toward the train station a little bit on Greenwich Avenue, he said, on the right, there's a place called Harvest. It's been open about 6 months.
Wow, new place.
And he said, trust me on this. Have the shaved Brussels sprout salad. He said, I just go crazy over this. And I thought, no, I don't think I'm going to have that. He said, it is so unbelievable. I want to have it every day.
Really? Okay.
So I
you
go
got me intrigued
down, this
because
is
I'm,
a
not
farm,
I'm not excited about it by just saying
farm,
it, right?
Yeah. This is a farm-to-table place.
Yeah.
And it's called Harvest Wine Bar and Restaurant.
Okay.
And I get in there, and it looks great. It's not fancy, but it has a good vibe. It looks terrific. So I go in, and I sit down, and I said, you know, I've been told that this is the thing to have here, so I'd like to start with this, and then I'll figure it out after that. And he said, okay. So he said to me, he says just off spontaneously, he said, oh, we cannot take this off the menu. He said, now we're going to have it all winter long. He said, we're going to do it, you know, just seasonally. He said, now we have to have it all winter long. And I look at the menu, and it's described this way on the menu. Shaved Brussels sprout salad with a Parmesan risotto cake and a truffle vinaigrette.
Okay.
Okay, you got me now. See, the Brussels sprout salad
different.
Didn't do it.
Right. That's a okay. little different That's, image.
Okay, so go ahead.
I
now explain
I want to
it.
Tell you that this is worth a train ride.
So what was
this
it?
Is worth a car ride. This is worth a walk of 50 miles. I would walk 50 miles to have this as often as possible.
Right, so go. You have
so
me on the edge of the
this.
Seat.
It comes out, and the Parmesan risotto cake has been pan-fried so that it's crispy on the outside, about
that.
The shape of a nice little hockey puck.
Okay.
And it's risotto inside with
soft,
a little crispy
right?
edge, soft inside, crispy
me.
Edge. Piled on top of it, they have shaved Brussels sprouts that have had maybe a little bit of heat on them.
Ooh, so
and so they're piled
almost.
Up into a pyramid on top of the risotto cake. Then shaved Parmigiano-Reggiano cheese around the plate.
Yeah.
And these Brussels sprouts have been tossed with a truffle vinaigrette. So a vinaigrette made with lemon and truffle oil.
Heaven.
It is eye-rolling, crazy delicious. I am
you should have brought us one.
She ate it.
To go. Oh, yeah, it would never have made
the plate
it, right?
Clean.
If she would have taken one to go, it would have went home, and the next morning it would have been gone.
You have
that would have been her breakfast.
Have this. You want a weekend little joint. You want to go for fun to Greenwich. If you're passing through in either direction on the way to New York or returning from New York, this restaurant is open 7 days a week. It is called Harvest Wine Bar and Restaurant right on Greenwich Avenue. The rest of the menu looks terrific, and they have a wood fire grill. They do the fish, the beef, the steaks, the burgers on this wood fire grill. He showed it to me. I wanted this in my kitchen.
Yeah. Sounds nice.
Harvest Wine Bar and Restaurant.
Road trip.
And Greenwich, I'm telling you, just trust me on this. Okay, who's a late night snacker here?
Who isn't?
I'm a late night meal eater.
Who's not a late night snacker?
I love that, John.
Even if you're not, you're a closet, like everyone's in bed and you tiptoe down the stairs. And
there's
you
no
look
closet
left,
involved.
Look right.
I just get up and bang things around. It's their problem. But
you know,
it's hard to eat potato chips in quiet.
What happens to me is I'm starving at around 4:30, and I think, okay, time for a snack before dinner, and then I end up eating a meal, and then around 9 o'clock, it's time for my next meal.
Me too.
You know, so I'm trying to change this and make, you know, late night snacks that are not too dangerous. And wow, do I have one from you! I want to thank the folks from Fine Cooking Magazine. I want to congratulate them on their new PBS cooking show, which is going to be called Movable Feast.
That's
that. Congratulations. We have loved Fine Cooking for a long time on this show, and in the October-November issue, which is out, they have a recipe for crispy kale chips with toasted lemon zest.
That would get me, the toasted lemon zest.
I'm going to give you their recipe. You can find it in their magazine, but I'm also going to put it on our website. So go to WNPR.org, search the Faith Middleton Show, and you'll find the exact amounts. So essentially, you take a kale, you trim it, tear it into bite-sized pieces, add some extra virgin olive oil, a touch of apple cider vinegar, grate some lemon zest from a couple of lemons, kosher salt, and we tell you how to put it on the sheet pan in the oven. It's very quick, and when it comes out, it is browned and crispy, and you have this thing of these kale potato chips.
It's my
salty.
Favorite flavor, salt and vinegar.
Unbelievably delicious. Unbelievably delicious.
Favorite flavor chip.
And you can
chip.
Sit there smug thinking I'm having a heart healthy snack, you know? I mean, it is really.
Is it like you just can't eat one?
It's so good. Okay, so congratulations to Fine Cooking Magazine. Thank you for this recipe, and you'll find a link to them on our site also because we love them. So crispy kale chips with toasted lemon zest. Your kids will like these. Grown-ups who are kids at heart, people who love late-night snacking.
I'm still going with it's my favorite flavored chip. Salt and vinegar, that is, there's nothing better for a late-night snack.
Yes.
Right. So find that recipe at WNPR.org. Search the Faith Middleton Show. Please support your local food growers and food makers. Brown paper bag meatloaf coming up next. More delicious conversation after a quick break. Please stay with us.
It's putting something in my food, Lord. Yeah. I believe my woman, she's putting something in my food. It used to be I didn't love her. And I've changed my whole attitude. Oh, yes, I have.
I'm Faith Middleton. This is the Food Schmooze Party coming to you in Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and New York, including the East End of Long Island. You can follow us on Twitter at FaithWNPR, FaithWNPR. I'm with my food buddies, Chris Prosperi of Metro Beast Restaurant in Simsbury, Connecticut, senior producer Lori Mack, producer Jonathan McNichol, and we now welcome back to the show Amy Traverso, who is food editor at Yankee Magazine. They have come out with a book called Lost and Vintage Recipes. Now, they did it as a special publication. We had Amy on the show before to talk about some of the recipes. This book has additional recipes in it, and there are two that we want to talk with Amy about if we possibly can. Amy, welcome back.
Thanks so much.
Oh, it's great to have you on the show. Amy, we just tried the brown paper bag meatloaf and it was delicious.
Yum.
I love that recipe. When I saw it in the archives, I said, paper bag meatloaf? What? I had to make it.
Well, Chris cooked this for us, and you know, we meant to do it in the brown paper bag, and you butter the inside of the brown paper bag. So Chris was looking all over for a paper bag. He didn't have one, and so we did the alternative, which it says you can do in the recipe, and he did it with just parchment paper.
Yes.
And so what is it that makes the meatloaf so moist?
The paper bag, I think, creates, first of all, an environment that seals in a certain amount of moisture, but there's also a certain wicking of fat away a little bit from the surface of the meatloaf. So you get this really nice crust. That's one thing I love about this recipe, because when I don't know if you remember when you were a kid, but my favorite part was always the crust.
Me too.
Of the meatloaf. And then, but you still maintain that moisture inside. So it's sort of the perfect cooking environment for
a meatloaf.
I was
worried there wasn't going to be a crust, but the crust was amazing.
Yeah, it's funny. You think it almost, okay, it's going to steam and it's going to be mushy, but it actually is sort of perfect.
It steams on the inside and then has a crust on the outside. And Chris, did you butter the parchment paper?
I buttered, quotation marks, the parchment paper.
What do you mean?
I buttered it with bacon fat. Well, there was pork in the recipe.
No wonder it's so good.
No, there was pork in the recipe. It was ground pork and beef. Ground beef. It had both. So I figured, why not use my butter?
Now, I will tell Reed, listeners, that you can make it without the fat on the paper. Parchment paper is sort of naturally nonstick. So if you are watching what you eat and you want to cut fat a little bit, you can do. It may stick a tiny bit, but really, it'll be great.
Well, you got this recipe from Carol Learned in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and she says it was her grandfather's recipe. He taught her to cook, and she said she's been using this recipe for 45 years, and that he was well-known in Ware, Massachusetts, for running the Dale Brothers Laundry until he retired, and then he would cook for church suppers, and I gather this was a very popular dish. And it is the traditional meatloaf with ground beef, ground pork, eggs, onion, green pepper, breadcrumbs, lots of ketchup, mustard, and salt and pepper.
Simple.
Yeah, and you can put any twist, right, Amy? Any twist on
Absolutely.
This meatloaf recipe.
Even bacon.
You could do it and if you, Greek, Southwest, whatever you want to do.
And if you have, if you have your favorite meatloaf recipe that is not this, just try it in the paper bag or in the parchment paper.
So Lost and Vintage Recipes is the name of the book. Amy Traverso, the food editor at Yankee Magazine, is back with us on the show. There are some new recipes that we didn't talk about last time in the book, and I'm going to go right to one of them. And that is English muffin bread. I was so intrigued when I saw this.
It's a very interesting title.
It's so good. And this book is so much about the foods we remember and the stories that we attach to them. And for me, this is absolutely a childhood food. This was my best friend's mother's recipe, Sue Williams. I grew up in Windsor, Connecticut, so it's local. and she made this all the time. She always had it in the house. And what you're doing is you're making a basic white bread, but you're using a lot of yeast, and you're only letting it rise once. And so you're not then re-kneading it and redistributing the yeast so it all rises perfectly evenly with little tiny bubbles. You're actually creating a rougher texture with bigger bubbles in the dough. And then you bake it in loaf pan. So what you get is this sort of bubbly, craggy texture of an English muffin. But it's a little easier to work with. It's a drier dough. I don't know if anyone here has ever made homemade English muffins, but it's a very wet dough that can be a little tricky to work with because it's sticky.
Nooks
so
and
this
crannies.
Is very
this
open.
Is easy, though, huh?
Oh,
and it has,
nooks and crannies.
One of the things I like about
What? That's what an English
That's
muffin's
right.
all
That's
about.
That's what the commercial said. Yeah, exactly.
Like we're into the crumpet muffin because it has holes in it. So this has a little cornmeal in it, which is interesting.
Ooh, so it gives texture,
yeah.
too.
It gives a little, cornmeal yeah. adds great texture, and you sort of sprinkle the pans with it. So, A, it prevents sticking, but it's the flavor. I mean, any kind of quick, easy bread like pancakes or this kind of a bread, I love adding cornmeal because it really rounds out the flavor of the wheat flour.
Now, you tested and tested and tested these recipes. We were saying a recipe can stay in a family for a very long time, and people eat it because it's attached to family and history, and so we remember them fondly. Not all vintage recipes are great. I mean, that's the thing. So,
oh, yeah.
So you have... Yeah. The idea is that, you know, Amy sat there and made and tested these recipes. Some you had to adapt a little bit for modern
taste.
Oh,
sure. Yes. Yeah. I mean, we had, you know, in our archives going back to the 1930s, we have recipes that were just much too heavy, that wouldn't appeal to contemporary tastes at all. I mean, obviously, those weren't even used, but I'm thinking of the deviled egg casserole that we passed on and the jellied bean salad that we passed on. But then, you know, there were some recipes that did use convenience products. For example, we had an old Swedish meatball recipe that used cream of mushroom soup, which is fine. And that's how I grew up eating it. It was really good. It was popular. But it really isn't that much. It's really the time of making Swedish meatballs is in the cooking of the meatballs. To make the sauce is 3 seconds. So you don't need the canned soup. So that's where we would make those changes. And we also cut fat where we could because people are conscious about that.
When I was in college, it was a fancy dinner party when we put in the can of soup with the chicken, some sour cream, and a little sherry.
Oh.
We
okay,
were fancy.
Sherry.
We were
no, but you know what? We should be cooking with sherry again. Sherry, brandy. They went out of favor, Madeira, but they add so much rich flavor to dishes and to sauces.
Well, Amy, do you feel the same way about when a recipe calls for white wine, sometimes I put in vermouth because
Yes. Yeah, I don't understand that. I think it's just about fashion that, you know, it's considered now very classy to make a sauce with white wine, but not vermouth. You know, I love vermouth because it has more flavor, more layers.
Were there any ingredients that you ran across in the old recipes that aren't maybe so easy to get now?
You know, actually, no. There were some ingredients that maybe were more common than they are now, like buckwheat flour, although I think with, you know, the rise in gluten-free cooking, buckwheat flour is increasingly available. You know, things like chestnuts. There are a few recipes in the book that use chestnuts. Certainly available, maybe not commonly used, but around the holidays you can find them.
I have to say, this was daring to put an Indian pudding recipe in your book.
Yeah. Remember because, that?
Well, and as kids, I turned my nose up at it, but it's so delicious now.
Delicious.
But there's such controversy and such debate, such fights about who has the ultimate Indian pudding recipe. So did you know that there was going to be a lot of conversation about this?
We know a lot of people are very tied to their Indian pudding recipe of choice. And, of course, this recipe really wasn't invented as much as it evolved. You know, it was sort of taking a British pudding tradition but using the ingredients you found in the New World. So, I mean, we're looking at the 17th century and forward. So people are going to probably have strong feelings. I think one of the things we did, which might open listeners' minds or readers' minds to trying it, is we do cut the molasses, which I think is the strong flavor that some people object to. Mm-hmm. We use a mixture of molasses and maple syrup, which softens the flavor a bit.
That's really good.
A nice touch.
Doesn't this sound good? Whole milk, cornmeal, molasses, maple syrup, butter, eggs, salt, sugar, ground cinnamon, ground ginger, grated nutmeg, and a little whipped cream on the top.
Or ice cream.
And a nap.
No, I love a scoop of vanilla ice cream so it melts as you eat it.
Oh,
yes. See, I love these kind of – it's got to be the memory tied to the food thing, right? Because you're right. Some of these aren't great things, but there's a memory tied to it. And when memory's tied to food, it heightens the – in my mind, what you think of it or how you feel about it.
When they're great, they are really great.
Yeah.
And so that meatloaf recipe – in the brown paper bag, or you can use parchment paper that we just tried from your book, Amy. That was so delicious. Just loved it.
And Chris, I didn't even think to use bacon fat. I think that's a very inspired choice. Bacon grease.
It is our motto here at the Food Schmiss. I have to throw it in every once in a while.
Except when we talk about the duck fat.
Yes. That could have been a good substitute.
Yes.
It has less trans fats than butter.
It does.
I want to point that out. Yes, it does. Okay. Let's go into the drink category. I just talked about a cocktail that's served in a martini glass using fresh lemonade and beer. And so I noticed that you have a recipe in your book for 1 week ginger beer. And that, of course, would be terrific to make a dark and stormy cocktail. So how do you do this ginger beer in 1 week?
Well, it's all about giving the ginger plenty of time to steep, because I don't know if you've tried to make your own ginger syrup, but even if you just wait a day, I've found that the ginger doesn't kind of fully express its flavor, and it just isn't as great as the ginger beer you may buy at the store. But by giving it a full week to sit, it really just develops great flavor.
So here's how this works. So in a saucepan, you're boiling some water.
Yeah.
You add fresh ginger, and you let it sit overnight.
Okay.
And then you just strain that out, pressing on the ginger, and that gives its, squeezes its flavor out.
Okay.
And then you pour this into a bottle with a funnel. You add some lime juice and a little bit of sugar. You stir it up, taste it, see what you want to add.
Yeah.
And then you cover that up, store it at room temperature. It steeps for about 24 hours, put it in another bottle so it decants really with a screw cap, and you put it in the refrigerator 3 to 5 days, and there you go.
Oh. And the flavors really get stronger, or they just sort of homogenize?
There's still some, there's still the residue, and there's little particulates in there. This is a recipe actually that came from a Jamaican reader who
Isn't this
wanted
great?
To share her it's really delicious.
So
it does develop some effervescence.
So you're really making ginger beer.
Yeah.
Well, we will add also a little bit of seltzer water just to enhance it. It's not a strong fizz.
So you would make it a ginger beer soda if you did that.
That's awesome.
So we're just talking about light brown sugar, lime juice, fresh ginger, and some water. And that's how you do it.
I know where this book is going after the show. I just want that ginger beer recipe.
Before we run out of time, Amy Traverso, food editor at Yankee Magazine, their section on lost and vintage recipes has come out as a hardback cookbook. And so we have Amy back to talk about a couple of new additions since she was here last time. Marlboro pie. Tell us about that. I've never heard of it.
I know, and it's a great historic dish that people love once they try it. Really, really popular in this country in the 17th, 18th, and 19th centuries. In fact, the first published recipe appears in a 1660 British book called The Accomplished Cook. Anyway, it is an apple custard pie, which most people have never had. It has, going back to the idea of cooking with sherry, it does have a little sherry. You grate the apples and you make a custard with a bit of with lemon juice. So you've got these lemon, sherry, sugar, apple, custard flavors all together. It is so good and a different way to do apple pie.
Oh, are we
What's
swooning?
The crust?
Yeah.
It's a classic, you know, you're doing a classic pie crust. You could, though, if you wanted, you could do a graham cracker crust.
Or you could buy it in the supermarket.
You totally was just thinking that. I'm totally taking this book home. We're going to have a fight after the show.
That could actually be a new Thanksgiving pie.
You know, what an
it would be a great Thanksgiving
pie. That's a great
thing to pull out. Lori, that's right, to put out on Thanksgiving. That is a wonderful idea.
If you don't like making crust, this is nice because it's not a double crust pie. You know, you could buy a crust and just make the custard, which is incredibly
simple. What do you think is the best store-bought crust? What's your opinion?
It's tough to find crust that is made with butter. Anything that's made with butter, I would go with. And there have been different brands on the market.
Chris, what do you like?
I'm going with Pillsbury because I use it, and I tell you, and I'll say this shamelessly again on air for everyone to hear it. People think I make my own pie crust all the time because I'm a chef, but I'll admit it. I use Pillsbury, and I roll it a little thinner so it doesn't look like the same thickness as the store-bought one, and I brush it with Amy, and I brush it with butter.
That's smart.
Everyone says I make the best pie crust.
It must be because
your dad is a French pastry chef. That's why you make the best pie crust. No, it's because I run across the street to Fitzgerald's, the small supermarket in Simsbury, and buy them out of Pillsbury pie crust every time I need to.
All right. That's the trick.
There's your endorsement.
Roll it out thinner and brush it with butter.
And no one will know.
I just want to say that in the bread department, there's also in this book a cheddar scallion beer bread that sounds very good to me.
It's so good. And it's so easy. The beer leavens the dough, and you don't have to rise it. You just make it right before supper, and it's ready.
Why was cooking easier back then?
So wait, in a mixing bowl, you stir together flour, cheese, scallions, sugar, baking powder, and salt. Add the beer all at once. Mix it up. Pour it into a pan. Drizzle with melted butter and bake it until it's golden brown. There is no rising. Oh, this is the bread for me.
Why was it so easy back then?
Because we had to cook and we were looking for sugar.
No one is taking this book home.
No, I don't. Faith, look over there. Hey, Faith, what's that? Over there on the other side of the room. Look.
Bacon is hanging on a tree.
Yeah. Okay. Yes, there's bacon over there. Faith, go look at the bacon. Give me the book.
You know, and the thing about the beer bread is you get that yeasty bread flavor without having to rise the bread.
Cheating. That's me.
And you can use Connecticut-made cheddar. You could
use Connecticut
beer.
Yep.
Scallions are still in season.
Yeah, and Connecticut, we have flour now with Young's Farm milling their own flour.
This is good. Great job, Amy Traverso of Yankee Magazine. Thank you so much for being back on the show, and we can't wait to see you soon.
Thanks so much.
And thank you so much to our friends at WGBH in Boston. Lost and Vintage Recipes now in a hardback cookbook. The Food Schmooze airs Wednesdays at 3 and 9 p.m., Saturdays at noon. Join the conversation with us on Facebook. Search The Faith Middleton Show. Here's to pleasure, my friends. And remember, never eat more than you can lift. In New Haven, I'm Faith Middleton.
Everybody eats when they come to mind.